This is The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is a continuation of the phases of learning that we've been discussing, phase A, B, C, and now D. And we will be interviewing Amy Lovin as part of that discussion. So now we join the podcast with Kendall Terry and Amy Lovin. We'd like to welcome to the podcast today Amy Lovin. Amy teaches fourth grade for us at Clayton Bradley Academy. And we're going to finish our series talking about how the brain learns. So we've done phase A, B, C, and now phase D. If you want to find out more about these phases, you can look up the book Exceeding Expectations 2. I'll provide the link in the description as well where you can get the book. But this is phase D of learning. So all of this is focused on how the brain learns and making sure that what we're teaching and how we're teaching aligns with what research says the brain learns, so that we can get stuff into long-term memory, which is our goal, not to do a memorization and then a dump for a test and then a forget as we walk out the door, which happens a lot in education. And depending on the type of education you may have had, you might have done that. And so we're wanting to hopefully get ideas and concepts into long-term memory. That's our goal as teachers. That's our goal at Clayton Bradley Academy. So Amy is going to talk about phase D, and she presented this with our staff, with a colleague, Barry Lucas, and Dr. Lucas might join the podcast to talk about this as well, but we were trying to get everybody's schedules to align. So right now it's just Amy. And so one, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And we're just going to jump right in. So we've talked with the whole staff before and on the podcast multiple times about phase A, B, C, and then that final bit of D. So when we talk about phase D, what are some of those things that come to your mind when you're thinking about that with your kids, when you're thinking about how to instruct in that way? What are we looking for? What are we trying to do when we say phase D of learning?
I feel like this is where everything comes together. This is where, you know, you start with that reflective piece, and this is where they go back. And I think that's something that we're great at, is allowing time to reflect, whether it be discussions, written reflections, problem solving during, you know, if you're engineering or if you're conducting a science experiment, you have that reflective thinking piece, which I think you have to start with. And then there's choice. We really do offer a lot of choice at every level from, I think really from kindergarten on, and how they present what they know and how they explore as they're learning. Yeah. So that might look like, you know, a choice board when you're little, and then, you know, at the high school, obviously they have
a little bit more open reins.
Yes.
And even that choice of how they're going to work, whether they're going to work, you know, sometimes kids just say, I need to be over here working, and say, okay, we'll do that. And then other kids are needing that choice to kind of talk through it or whatever. So even providing that environmental choice piece to say, let's try to figure out how you need to get about this. I know for myself, there's times that I just need to process in my head. And then there's other times that I'm like, okay, I need to bounce some stuff off of somebody here to try to get a little bit further down the road. So when we're talking about learning, we talked about phase A was that kind of being there, trying to fit that pattern of where does this occur in the world. So it's all about pattern seeking. We know that. And phase A, phase B continues that kind of pattern seeking where we're seeing this in the real world, and now we're looking at vocabulary, trying to attach vocabulary to it. Phase C is, you know, we've talked about that being just practice, right? We want to practice it the correct way, and we want to get that pattern into program form in the brain. Phase D then is all about that program coming out and applying it now in new ways. And so you talked about reflective thinking. That's one of the ways that we're as teachers looking for that program to be correct, right? So I'm looking at how they're reflecting. I'm listening to the conversations in their groups. We call it waitressing, where you're going around, you're kind of hearing how these projects are developing, and you're seeing, is the program right? And if the program is right, then you let them apply, right? Like now it's a, yeah, really put this together. So putting it together in maybe even a different way than what they learned it in A and B of the learning. So you talked about reflective thinking. You talked about choice, which is a huge, the brain loves choice, right? Even if it's simple choices, it's still the brain loves the ability to say, like, I chose that. And so if I chose it, then I'm going to actually do it the right way, right? So what else are you looking for when you're working with this with fourth graders? What might that look like?
I mean, like you said, even if it's a simple choice, we're talking about animal structure and function right now. You would not believe how bought in, they get to this one, they get to choose any animal they want. Oh, yes, nice. Any animal. And it's, okay, pick one from the five, you know, here are the five classifications of animals. Now choose one from each. What, ooh, I want to choose this bird. And just how excited they get when they can research their own thing. And once they finish the basic structure and function of each classification, they can move on to a curiosity project and dig deeper. If they're, you know, if they have that time and they have that inclination, they can do a deeper research and then present that as well.
Yeah. And so everything then is, when we're talking about phase D, that's really where we're getting into that project part of what we do. We do a lot of project-based learning here at the school. And so when we're talking about kids actually really developing these projects, as you said, this research project now with the animal, I'm trying to think of other, some of those bigger projects that we do, even up through the high school. I know we've done stuff where they've had to pick the circle of functions project that we do in math, where they're looking at how these functions that they've learned are all coming together. That's an end of the year project that we do with our math students at the high school, where they're now having to apply all of these different functions and go from one to the next and show how each one beside each other are connected until they circle all the way back to the beginning. And so you're really, once again, the teachers are looking for that application piece. Can they take what we learn and apply it a little bit different over here to make this whole circle make sense? Another thing is looking at how students are teaching each other. So kind of that peer review process, but also, you know, allowing one student to say, hey, let me explain this to you. Maybe you'll get it if I explain it to you this way. So in fourth grade, what does that peer teaching maybe look like?
It is funny that you said that. I mean, I can say, I feel like I say the exact same thing, but a student says it maybe one word off, different tone, different something. And, oh, I get that. So it can look like being a math mentor. If, you know, someone who already has a concept and let me help you with this, and they'll sit down and go over it with them or problem solve. And we really emphasize how to help, right? It's not helpful to give the answer, but can you point them in a direction? Can you ask them questions? Can you show them maybe the next step to help them work through it? And they're getting pretty good at actually being a useful mentor to each other, or even just explaining something in another way, or peer editing when we're writing. They might catch things. We'll talk about, you know, for example, with STEM Fair, they had to write their procedures. And, you know, at a young age, they don't understand how explicit they really need to be with those steps. And so we'll trade and say, well, let's look at your partners. Do you have any questions for them? What questions do you have? Are they missing something if you were going to try to do this? And they do. They get really good at saying, well, I'm not really sure what you meant about this. Can you explain this part to me more clearly?
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about this as a staff with the rise of artificial intelligence and AI components. That ability to edit is becoming more and more important. My brother-in-law was even talking about this earlier today of he had seen some pictures that were AI generated. And he said that he was talking about this person got caught using AI when they were saying they didn't. And part of them getting caught is that they didn't really pay attention to all the little components of the picture. And so the picture, just if you looked at it on the surface, would have looked fine. And you would have been like, oh yeah, that's of this place, you know, and you'd have moved on. But when you really started to look at each component, you realized the AI had messed up on some stuff and didn't fully understand probably what the person had said to put in that picture. And so everything didn't look what it should have looked right, you know, if a human had created it. And so that ability to edit, to think deeply and go, wait a second, there's something off with this, or I don't think that says exactly what I thought it should say, right? And so that ability to edit, once again, huge importance to our students as they progress into this world of artificial intelligence. Being able to read something and understand it, but being able to edit it and catch those little errors along the way to say, wait a second, something's not right here. That shows a huge level of understanding to be able to find that. Another thing that talks about with phase D is the celebration of learning. Now, I know when I had a couple fourth graders come through, right? All three of mine have come through fourth grade now. They used to end the year with like a poetry tea. Does that still happen?
Our poetry reading, yes.
Does that happen at the end of the year?
Yeah,
or does that happen?
Very, very end of the year.
Okay. So I think about that kind of like a celebration. So can you talk a little bit about that? You might not have been thinking about that project, but when I think about Celebration, that was a really cool celebration for fourth grade students to be able to get up and present their work. So mm-hmm. what did that look like?
They have a chance to write their own poetry. We'll give them models. You know, they get lots of scaffolding. Some are just natural poets, and they yeah. go off on their own. And some need a structure. And so, you know, one in doubt, here's a haiku, friends. But they're you know, some are more formulaic than others, and so it's easier for them to do that. And then, you know, we do a lot of presenting at CBA. We do a lot of presenting, and so I think it just helps them to have that experience. They've been on family gathering stage, they've done presentations in class, and now because poetry tends to be so, it can be very personable and very vulnerable.
Right.
And so I do offer the option of presenting a poem from another author, because it can be very vulnerable to be up there. And we talk about that and what that looks like. And, you know, they'll start small in class, and we work our way up to a bigger stage on the Family Center again. But that, again, that's just, and we talk about it. My dad's an English professor. And so I grew up going to plenty of readings,
yeah.
and poetry readings included. And so there's always the reception, right? You get a little bit dressed up. There's the cheese and the grapes. And so we just try to recreate that atmosphere and make it special.
And I think that's what it does, as you said, make it special. But it's one of the things that helps the kids then to really take pride in this thing I created. I have confidence to get up there and read this. And I know what they're reading the day the parents are there. Now, do parents still get invited? I don't want to say something that's not actually happening. Sorry about that.
That is great. That's a great
it
question.
It used to be a smaller class, so you could invite parents a little bit easier.
I don't know that we did last year, to be honest.
Okay. So it was one of those that, you know, it's still, though, getting up, like you said, in front of friends, and they're getting a little dressed up, and you have finger foods out for them and that sort of thing. And so it's that cool experience of how, you know, imagine ending fourth grade by getting up and reading this piece of work that maybe you created that you're taking pride in and sharing at that you know, kind of published stage, right, with your friends and with your teacher. And just to see them, as I've watched some of these from year to year, of the pride that, you know, you kind of get that twinkle in their eye, right, that like this is something I did, especially when it's their original work. You know, they get so proud of reading that. Even if they start off a little shy, you know, you'll start to see that pride, though, build as they're doing this, of like, this is my work.
Well, and when you talk about multiple intelligences, there's always someone who absolutely blows you away. This yeah. is their, maybe there were other avenues that they didn't feel comfortable presenting, or things they didn't feel comfortable with, but this, they just came to life. And yeah. there's always at least one that absolutely blows everybody away. Jaws are on the floor, and you just can't believe how profound fourth graders really yeah. are.
Absolutely. And it's, you mentioned the multiple intelligences. This is one of the opportunities for students to shine inside of that. It comes with choice, right? And we talk about multiple intelligence with our teachers to say it's not your job as a teacher to present the information in all the different categories of multiple intelligence. But there are times when students are able to present what they've learned through what they understand the best. And that's where I think that multiple intelligence really allows kids to shine in that way, to say, it's not about how I learned it, by however I had to go about learning it. And it's great when there's choice, and it's great when there's variety, but it's how do they present it, right? So that you can really see them come to life. Maybe it's that musical ability all of a sudden comes out. I was always impressed whenever I did projects and had kids, you know, be like, well, you can do your final presentation in a song, you know, and I would put some of these choices on there going, that is not what I would have chosen. I would not have chosen a song in any way whatsoever. And then these kids would get up and they're like, I'm going to do a song. And I'm going, oh no, you know, what's this going to be? And you know, here all of a sudden they pull out this, well, I made this beat using GarageBand, or they pull a guitar out, you know, and start strumming a guitar or whatever. And you're going, oh my goodness, like, who is this kid all of a sudden? You know, this is not the kid that has sat in the class. And so it's great to see that, because you start to see them shine once again, and they're applying what they're learning, and they're using this new way to show you what it is they've learned. And it's great seeing them do that. And you know, of course, they'll do spoofs to other songs and rewrite stuff and lyrics. And it's really fun. And I'm like, as long as it makes sense, like, we're going to go with it, right? And then you see them actually get up and do this, and you're like, oh, wow, that's impressive. Like, that went way beyond what I was thinking when I said you could make a song. I was thinking a little jingle, you know, or like a little nursery rhyme kind of thing. And they went and used some modern, you know, song that an artist is out there singing on the radio, and it's completely changed all the rules or all the words. It's really fun to listen to them and watch them do that. Like, you really start to see them come to life in Phase D.
It is.
So some other things, obviously, you can get to the point of them creating their own inquiries or creating their own rubrics. That is a very high level thinking for a lot of students to get to that point, and that's going to look very different as a child progresses, of what they can understand to go in a rubric or what they can understand in an inquiry. Have you ever explored that with kids, of allowing them to kind of make their own questions or make their own assessments or whatever? What's that like in fourth grade?
In math, it's really fun, especially towards the end of the year. I call it math teacher. And they have, you know, they'll have a standard, and they will create a lesson, some way to practice that skill. Yeah. It could be a game that they create. It could be, you know, some sort of activity. They create a way, and then they create an assessment. And they all take turns doing that. And throughout the year, they'll have a chance to design math games too, but this is just a more involved process at the end of the year, because, yeah, again, we're to the review stage, and they have that time to, you know, and they love to be the math teacher.
I remember mine going through that and having that opportunity to get up and do that math teacher lesson, and then how are they going to assess everybody's learning? You know, and how are they going to check on their friends? They love doing that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and they, you know, sometimes their games are so elaborate that we're like, those are amazing and so creative. We might need to scale this back.
Yeah.
They do get really excited about just creating those different inquiries and like you said, just ways of, how do I know that you know this? And they're surprising. Well, I shouldn't say surprisingly nurturing, because we help them with here with our life skills and lifelong guidelines, but they really do like to mentor each other. I've never seen anyone who didn't want to help another student in some way. It helps them solidify their own learning. It helps them take on that leadership role. And I have yet to encounter a student that didn't enjoy doing that, you know, to some extent.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, watching kids try to challenge each other in that way, it's like you said, they do want to help each other along the way, but they want to give those kind of hard problems to see if somebody understands it. I've done a lot of those where you can create a board game, you know, and that's another one where it's like, okay guys, if we're going to create a board game, like, go back and read the rules of board games, like, to try to figure out, can I create something that actually is like a real game? And it blows my mind still with what kids come up with in the games and the intricate parts of the game. And, you know, they'll throw in these different vantage points along the way, or, you know, oh, it landed on that piece, you get this challenge now activity or whatever. And it's great to see that. Like, you can really see what the learning is. And I think it solidifies that into long-term memory of, like, they'll remember that game. Even if they don't remember what you did in class as a teacher, they'll remember making that game with their partners. And so that's, once again, important for the teacher to be waitressing to make sure that, yes, they are following the right patterns here that we've established, and that makes sense to do that. And so that's another great activity for kids to see that Phase D learning, making the game, creating the song, teaching the lesson to other kids. It's all part of that, them using that knowledge and then allowing that to come out to try to help somebody else understand it. And of course, a big component here is adequate time. And adequate time is one of those that I was always challenged with as a teacher, because I felt like there were so many things that I needed to get done as a teacher. There's so many concepts I need to teach. There's so many standards that I'm trying to help kids master. And the adequate time, you know, pushes. And I have to step back sometimes and go, okay, I haven't given enough time for these kids to get there yet. Or I haven't given them enough time to really shine in this project. And so then the project maybe isn't as good. And it's like, well, it's not as good because I didn't let them finish it, right? So that adequate time and independent practice and that sort of thing becomes huge for this type of learning. And so adequate time is one that is a challenge for all teachers out there. How does that come out with what you teach in class, and what's that challenge like for you?
I think that being a self-contained classroom actually really helps with that, and the fact that we integrate.
Yeah.
So I can build in more time because I'm integrating subjects, and if I do see that something's running a little bit longer and they haven't had the time to work on it the way that I'd like to, then, you know, maybe we do extend that another day, or maybe we meld it in with this other writing project and we'll extend it in that way. But I mean, I agree. Adequate time is a challenge for everyone, especially, you know, math is always a challenge because yeah. it doesn't lend itself quite as naturally to integration the way that writing, social studies, and science do. And so that's always a little bit more of a challenge. But I just find that there are years I have to slow my roll and
yeah.
just this is the pace that we're at, and this is where I need to be in order for them to get where they need to be and understand that concept. Or it doesn't do any good for me to just continue to plow forward when they
right.
don't have it. So yeah, that is a challenge.
Well, and in the book it talks about this too, of because of those constraints, and because for a lot of teachers end up facing in the school that they teach, there's a set schedule of I have to move to this next chapter, I have to move to this next idea, and what that creates then are gaps. You know, and now you're getting a kid maybe in fourth grade that doesn't understand multiplication. Multiplication we teach here in the third grade. So they get to you in fourth grade. All of a sudden they have a gap in multiplication. Well, now you are only able to do what you can do in math if they have that gap, right? Like you're having to solidify some of that and back up and reteach and back up and try to get the right concepts because they have that gap. So if we can do everything we can to keep those gaps from developing, then we're able to really move forward with our kids in the concept that we're working on, right?
Right.
And so I know that's a huge challenge, because if they're not understanding multiplication, then when they're doing what they're doing in fourth grade, are you guys fractions?
Fractions.
Long division, multiplication with several digits and all this. Well,
they get too hung up on the fluency and yeah. can't move past it to the multi-step.
And so that becomes a challenge. And so it's allowing that adequate time for them to really solidify that learning, get it down into long-term memory so that the output is there, right? We want that output to be consistent and correct and confident so that they know that pathway there. We talk about this with the staff when it comes to brain research, of all of that is building that myelin sheath around the axon, the dendrite coming out of the brain, the nerve cells. And so we want that myelin sheath to be nice and thick. That's solidifying that learning to the right understanding, the right output, so that they can hopefully go back and get that when they need it. And then they're applying it to multiple digits. They're applying it to fractions. They're applying it to long division. They're applying it to all these other things. That's a huge importance. And so we got to give adequate time for it to develop. And every kid is going to be a little different there, right? I mean, we know that every kid's brain is not the same. And so trying to give that adequate time so that all kids can get to that long-term confident in what they can retrieve. Because if they can't retrieve it, did they really learn it?
Right.
I mean, we've talked about that, of learning is not just getting it in, but it's them being able to retrieve it and get it out at the appropriate time in the appropriate way. Yeah. And so that's a big challenge. And it's all part of phase D, is how do we allow kids to solidify those pathways and produce this work that we want them to produce. And you've done a great job with that. We just had STEM Fair here a couple weeks ago, and I know STEM Fair has been one of those things that you have helped develop here at the school, and being able to walk around and see these amazing projects that our kids had done. And they had done them primarily in class, right? They had done them primarily on their own or with a partner for the project. Mm-hmm. And when you saw the work that was on the boards, it was student work that I know that these students had pride in what they were doing. You could see the effort in how they were designing their boards, in the research that was going on, in whatever thing they had setting there in front of their board. And you could see it as students, some of the students I saw coming back for like the final steps of judging. I mean, you know, they were just so excited to get to that point.
They are there. I mean, I think being able to, again, choice, because in fourth grade they get to choose in anything, any science project that they want, so they're invested already, and they've done it on their own. I mean, obviously they have to have some help at home with the data collection, but everything else has been on their own, and they really take ownership of it. And at the beginning, we talk about how that can be a lot of work, but I said, trust me, when you get this board done, when you're up there presenting, you will feel so proud of yourselves. And I had a student just today, I said, do you remember when you told us that when we were done, we'd be really proud? And I said, yeah, I do. He said, you were right. I said, I'm glad to hear that.
That's
but
awesome.
They really do. And like you said, getting called for interviews, oh my goodness. But, you know, we've talked about, they interviewed each other in fourth grade. You know, they practiced interviewing each other to help them, again, solidify their thinking and be able to explain what their project was to other people so that they could, you know, practice and be ready if they were to be called for an interview for the finals. But I think they enjoyed even just practicing with each other. They all presented to the class and enjoyed, they worked hard on those and they were very proud and they liked presenting that to, you know, I have kids who maybe don't love writing, but they loved writing about STEM Fair because they were so excited about what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's that choice of this is what I got to decide. I remember my son when he was going through, it was either fourth or fifth grade, I believe, he did a Rubik's Cube project. And I mean, you know, that was one of those times you never had to ask him where he was in the process because he loved that idea. He loved solving Rubik's Cubes at the time. And so it was like this passion of his of like, how can I use something that I'm passionate about and put it over here into some kind of scientific method or whatever. And it was a cool thing to watch him do it and to have that pride. And this is his thing, right? This was his work and this was his abilities that he got to showcase and then tell other people about his findings. And so that's really exciting to see that kind of come out and you get that twinkle back in their eye of they do love learning and they do love school. The brain loves learning new things. It's just a matter of getting that, you know, hook in them to say, this is going to be a lot of fun. And typically you can get that to happen. Well, I want to thank you for sitting down and we went through a lot of things on here. Was there anything else that you were like, wait, I had a note here that I wanted to talk about that I haven't mentioned?
I think we have covered it.
And probably way more than what you planned on covering. So I appreciate your willingness to sit down and talk and just to reflect on fourth grade, but also just the learning that takes place at Clayton Bradley. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
This has been The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about the school, you can find us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org, or you can find us on social media sites at CBA STEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day.